Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is Sirius XM Progress. We made it. And I'm John Fugelsang. So good to be with you. 866-997-4748 is going to be our number for the next 3 hours. We got a lot of fun coming up this evening. TV's Frank, Frank Conniff of Mystery Science Theater 3000 is here to help recover from the week. And the great David Korn of Mother Jones and MSNBC joins us later on this hour to talk about a really unlikely pair of recipients for the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Award. Spoiler alert, pretty safe bet that the actual Ruth Bader Ginsburg would not have honored Elon Musk or Rupert Murdoch. This is a thing that actually happened. Our executive producer is the great Chris Houseelt. Thea Harper runs this thing as well, and we are so glad to have you with us. Want to let you know, we are on tour. It's very exciting. The Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is back in spite of overwhelming popular demand and a passionately written letter co-signed by Bono and Jimmy Carter. April 13th, it all kicks off in Minneapolis. April 27th in Philly. May 11th, Madison. May 18th in Albuquerque. June 1st in Seattle. June 22nd in Denver. July 13th in Boston. July 27th in Atlanta. August 3rd in New York City. 2 weeks later, we're in Chicago for the big convention. September 7th in Portland. September 21st, Durham, North Carolina. September 28th, Phoenix. October 12th, Kansas City. November 2nd, right before Election Day in Los Angeles. And inauguration weekend, Saturday, January 18th in Washington, D.C. All of these shows, with the exception of our Democratic Convention show in Chicago, all of these shows are in association with Live Nation. Come on down and see us. Go to LiveNation.com or SexyLiberal.com to get all the information you need. There's a lot to get to tonight, guys. Let's just begin with the big story today. Beware the Ides of March. You know, before the Ides of March, Caesar was an emperor. Now he's a salad. Beware. It's not good. The story that's getting the most headlines today is probably Mike Pence. He said today he will not endorse Donald Trump for president in 2024, breaking with the man who made him vice president and then made him the target of an angry mob looking to hang him by his neck. Here it is. Donald Trump won't have Mike Pence to kick around anymore. Today on Fox News, the former VP, in his own pious, pompous way, managed to do the right thing while still being completely unlikable. Give a listen.
It should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump this year. Look, I'm incredibly proud of the record of our administration. It was a conservative record that made America more prosperous, more secure, and saw conservatives appointed to our course in a more peaceful world. But that being said, during my presidential campaign, I made it clear that there were profound differences.
What? You had a what?
Between me and President Trump on a range of issues, and not just our difference on my constitutional duties that I exercised on January the 6th. I mean, as I have watched his candidacy unfold, I've seen him walking away from our commitment to confronting the national debt. I've seen him starting to shy away from a commitment to the sanctity of human life. And this last week is his reversal on getting tough on China and supporting our administration's effort to force a sale of ByteDance TikTok.
Why do you think he did that? Why do you think he had that reversal on that before we go, sir?
Well, I can't speculate
money,
on it. But what I
bribes.
Can tell you is that in each of these cases, Donald Trump is pursuing and articulating an agenda that is at odds with the conservative agenda that we governed on during our four years.
Thank you,
and that's
Chris.
Why
I can't listen anymore. Can't listen anymore. So congratulations to Mike Pence for being brave for the second time in his life. And for being brave without help from Dan Quayle for the first time in his life. He is the most prominent Republican to say he will not back Trump this year, and he deserves credit for it. Other people like Mitch McConnell have groveled back and nestled their faces between Trump's smelly nether folds. And a vice president not endorsing a president, not endorsing his president, running for re-election. I think the last time that happened, I think, was 1912. When Teddy Roosevelt's vice president, Charles Fairbanks, supported Taft, that was a crazy election. Teddy Roosevelt was the Republican. He left, turned it over to Taft. Another Republican, he thought Taft was way too corrupt because Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican who couldn't stand corruption and bribery. Really hated it. I know. I don't know where he'd land in today's politics. So in 2012, Teddy Roosevelt resigned the Republican Party and ran for president again in the Progressive Party. And he got a million more votes than Taft, the Republican incumbent. And his former VP supported Taft. Of course, Woodrow Wilson, the racist Democrat, won by a landslide. But historically speaking, this hasn't happened in over 100 years. And it's not just his vice president. Two of his defense secretaries have said they won't support Trump. Two of his Homeland Security secretaries, two of his NSAs have said they wouldn't do it. His communications director, his chief of staff. This is where we find ourselves. And the media keeps wanting to sell this to you that, oh, what an unpopular election. No, both candidates are these old men. It's so Americans are so mad with this choice. I am so sick of this being fed to me by the media, brothers and sisters. I am so tired. Americans just don't. They don't want to say it. This is the media's both sidesism. Americans want a new choice. They're mad. I mean, can you believe this? Look, Donald Trump. I mean, on the one hand, he led a violent terrorist attack against the U.S. Capitol to overturn the election, ending 200 years of peaceful transfer of power. And over here, this lunatic Joe Biden thinks women should have control of their own bodies. They're both insane. Well, people don't want this choice. I mean, Biden's old with a stutter, and Trump is old and rapes people. We deserve a better choice. This is what we're going to be fed, guys. Do not look to the corporate media for anything resembling fair and balanced. Now, today, the judge overseeing the Fulton County, Georgia prosecution of Donald Trump. Which one is that? That's the state of Georgia by Fonnie Willis. He put out an opinion that was pretty fascinating, rejecting efforts by Donald Trump and his co-defendants to get Fonnie Willis tossed out of the prosecutor's role. She won her battle. Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee did not find that Ms. Willis's relationship with Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade amounted to any kind of conflict of interest that should force her off this incredible RICO case against the former president. It's a huge win for the rule of law today, because if the defendants had succeeded and gotten her thrown off, I don't think they would have been able to replace her. I mean, someone would have to really want all the death threats that come with this prosecution. And although she won the motion, I'll tell you, Judge Scott McAfee went out of his way to put her down in public and shame her as much as possible. He said if Trump and his allies had failed to sufficiently substantiate claims. He said that they had failed to sufficiently substantiate claims that Willis's romantic relationship with Wade had created an actual conflict of interest that required her entire team being removed from the case. And so he gave her an ultimatum. Either you're off the case or Nathan Wade is off the case. And that's the coworker with whom Fonnie Willis had this romantic relationship that prompted this whole circus. So he resigned a couple hours ago. And now Fonnie Willis is going to move full speed ahead in this case. And it seems fair enough. It seems predictable enough, too. These judges try to be Solomonic. You know, a couple days ago, this judge dropped 3 charges against Trump. I know, right now it's down to only 88 criminal indictments against him. Although McAfee did say that Fani Willis could refile all 3 of the charges. He seems to be helping her out. But he still let her have it today. He said she used bad judgment. He said it was questionable that she and Wade were honest about the relationship. Let me quote the judge. This finding is by no means an indication that the court condones this tremendous lapse in judgment or the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during evidentiary hearing. Rather, it's the undersigned's opinion that Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices, even repeatedly. And it is the trial court's duty to confine itself to the relevant issues and applicable law properly brought before it. Yet reasonable questions about whether the DA and her hand-selected lead SADA testified truthfully about the timing of their relationship further underpin the finding of an appearance of impropriety and the need to make proportional efforts to cure it. Ultimately, dismissal of the indictment is not the appropriate remedy to adequately dissipate the financial cloud of impropriety and potential untruthfulness out there. And he criticized her for having an unprofessional manner, for casting racial aspersions. It'd be different if it was Clarence Thomas, and we knew he'd been taking bribes from decades for people who had cases before him he was ruling on. It'd be different if it was Clarence Thomas, and his wife was an insurrectionist supporting the terrorists that day, communicating with the indicted chief of staff, Mark Meadows. But Clarence Thomas walks between the raindrops, folks. And Donald Trump is winning this war in the big picture. I mean, it was a good day for Fani Willis, but the judge said an odor of mendacity remains. The entire case is about mendacity. The entire case is about lies. And that's why it was so important for the prosecution to be so upfront. You got to be so squeaky clean if you're going after these people. And meanwhile, in Florida, Judge Aileen Cannon, as we know yesterday, refused to dismiss the federal criminal charges in the classified documents case. Now, she rejected a bid by Trump's lawyers to dismiss the charges. This is over the documents he stole and lied about and defied a subpoena for and ordered his underlings to move and lie about that one. She said it's difficult to see how this gets you to the dismissal of an indictment, but she still hasn't set a trial date yet either. See, this has always been noise. All of this legal jargon going on with these trials. It's noise, smoke, and double talk and jive. The real story is that Donald Trump tried to overturn a free and fair election. Donald Trump ended a 200-year tradition of peaceful transfer of power. But this country and its justice system were designed by and for rich white men like Trump. So they never actually have to face justice. Occasionally they do. Occasionally they do, but you know, these men having a reckoning in this earthly realm, it's few and far between. This country was founded by wealthy white guys who thought only they should be allowed to vote. And now, 248 years later, Donald Trump is a millionaire at birth who somehow gets to hire his own judges. And the courts are revealing that by design, they can't do the job we need to stop Donald Trump from getting the White House again. And that's important to remember because a lot of good people have been groomed by the endless army of cable news legal experts that, oh, the courts will hold him accountable. Jack Smith and Fani Willis and Alvin Bragg, Tish Jowie. And in fairness, you know, yeah, he's been guilty twice this year already, folks. He's already $500 million in the hole. Hasn't slowed him down yet. He's got lots of rich douchebag dictators around the world more than happy to give him a loan because the world's worst dictators want him back. And you'd think Americans would be able to recognize when Vladimir Putin wants you there, when Viktor Orban wants you there, when Hamas wants you back, when Netanyahu wants you back, when Kim Jong-un wants you back. Maybe that's not a guy you want in power. But the courts aren't going to do it. They can't hold him accountable. They won't. They can't. It is still only the voters that can ever do that. And Trump, he may be a convicted felon before Election Day, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be president, people. And the courts continue to make sure that time is always on Donald Trump's side. Our legal system doesn't care if this guy's going to go on trial before Election Day or after. It's not the job of the legal system to hold him accountable politically, just legally. His top priority since these indictments, all these felony charges, was delay. delay the trials until after the election. And they're doing it. We have news of it happening in New York. Courts are helping him run out the clock. They helped him do it when he was president. They're doing it again. And what we witnessed in Georgia is about Fani Willis being just fiendishly targeted by an army of well-paid Trump lawyers trying to help this criminal run out the clock long enough to become president again and presumably enjoy immunity for his crimes. That's the system. It's designed to help guys like Trump. The legal system is not designed to save us from guys like Trump. His lawyers have successfully delayed the January 6th trial, the most important trial in history, most likely until after the election. I mean, that's shocking. It is my hope that that trial begins in the fall and is happening during Election Day. But we don't know when the trial over the classified documents is going to start. And today, his criminal trial in Manhattan, which was supposed to start March 25th, will be delayed by at least 3 weeks after the judge overseeing the whole mishigas agreed the former president and the DA's office need more time to review records from federal prosecutors that are related to Trump's crimes. So again, this is a huge win for Trump, or at least a partial win for Trump, because he's pushing so hard, spending so much money that your racist uncle sends him. They're just looting it. They are looting it. And they're going to loot the RNC coffers. You're going to see so many candidates complaining on the Republican side that they're not getting any money from the organization because all the money is paying for you-know-who's criminal cases. It's going to be fascinating. It's like a Herzog movie already. But these courts move at their own pace, and there's going to be a lot of appeals. And Donald Trump has decades of experience in delaying legal accountability. Alvin Bragg, Fani Willis, Jack Smith, they're going to make sure a lot of facts come out before Election Day. And that may impact our elections, the facts that we learn. But the courts aren't voting in November. The courts are not going to decide who gets 270 stupid electoral votes. That's still up to us. Alvin Bragg, Fani Willis, Jack Smith, Tish James, they can't save us. Robert Mueller, Merrick Garland, Joe Biden, they can't save us. Batman, Black Panther, Indiana Jones, Jedis, Gandhi, Jesus, not going to save us. This election is not between Trump and Biden. It's between Trumpism and not Trumpism. This election is between democracy and a day one dictator. And it's all going to come down to us. If there is large voter turnout, democracy will win and Trump will probably go to jail. Well, I don't think he's ever going to jail. It's nice to talk about, but our country's designed for guys like him to pay a fine and get a slap on the wrist at best and be told no for the first time in their lives. But let's frame it that way. This trial, and maybe Democrats need to start marketing it this way, is going to be a trial to see if Trump goes to the White House or if he goes to the big house. And the only thing we know is, like every other election, if there's high voter turnout, the status quo loses. If there's low voter turnout, the status quo wins. Republicans are flooding the zone with bullshit to make it seem like your vote doesn't matter and everything's shitty. And oh, look, Robert Kennedy has a bigger lunatic as his vice president now. Please, please let Aaron Rodgers be RFK Jr.'s VP. Speaking of which, the White House sent a letter to Mike Johnson earlier today. They more or less announced to him, your impeachment inquiry of Trump is over. This letter shows the White House has had it with this impeachment business, and the Democrats know it's over. It came from White House counsel Edward Siskel. Republicans are acknowledging they're never going to impeach the guy. Johnson hasn't committed to holding a vote on any impeachment articles. Johnson's on the Republican retreat where he's discovering most of the Republicans didn't care and didn't show up. But White House counsel Siskel said it is obviously time to move on, Mr. Speaker. This impeachment is over. And he called the entire effort a charade. We want to know what you guys think. We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Let's get a quick call before we hit the break, shall we? Let me go to Hunter calling from the beautiful state of South Carolina on line two. Hi, Hunter. Thank you so much and welcome for calling.
Hey, John. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I think I was doing better when I called. This got a little depressing this evening, but
Believe me, it's not depressing. None of this is depressing. I've never thought the courts were going to show up and actually rescue us. It's going to come down to us. The courts can help. I mean, they are helping. But if people are expecting that these legal analysts on MSNBC are the ones who are going to save us, it's not going to be that way. It's going to come down to high voter turnout. And I think we can win it because he's lost the popular vote twice before already.
I agree, but he also won the presidency once. But yeah, that's not exactly what I called about. But
you called about what Bernie's talking about.
I did, yeah, because I'm one of those guys. So he was talking about the 4-day work week and introducing that into law, and I am fortunate enough to get to work one of those. And I'll tell you, really? Man, it's fucking awesome. Yeah,
tell me, has
great.
What has been the impact on your productivity going from 5 days a week work to 4 days?
My stress levels are so far down, even though I have more responsibilities at work. I get more done. I have more time with my family. I have a day in the middle of the week just to do things when other businesses are normally operating.
Nice.
I work in audio video, so it's kind of a construction related industry, and I won't bore you with the details, but it's custom high end construction. It's that sort of stuff. So normally that's Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, or more like usually like 6 to 6, honestly. But, ours is 7 to 5:30. And when we're done. And, we have great management at our shop. That's fantastic. Like, they realize that we are human beings. They are deeply conservative Southern people, and they're also really kind human beings. It's kind of a weird mix, but.
No, I grew up around a lot of really, really nice conservative Southern people, and they can be quite lovely. It's the far right wing, batshit hateful ones that concern me the most. But you find them all over the country, not just the South. So,
indeed. Yes, you do. I've lived all over this country. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Me too.
But
love every part of it.
It's just great.
I'm glad to hear this, Hunter, because I mean, I think, it's not going to go anywhere. But Senator Sanders certainly made history by introducing a bill in the Senate for a 32-hour work week. And this issue is not going to get quieter in the weeks and months and years to come. So thank you so much for sharing your experience, man. I appreciate it. Thank you. Give a call more often. We got to hit a quick break. The great David Korn is waiting in the wings. We'll be getting to all your calls tonight. This is Progress.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And welcome back. So earlier this week, the Dwight D. Opperman Foundation announced the 2024 winners of the Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg Leadership Awards. They hail iconic individuals for their extraordinary achievements. And looking at it, you're like, okay, well, let's see. Martha Stewart. Okay. I could sort of see that. She built something and recovered from some. Sylvester Stallone. Okay. I like the first three and the sixth Rocky film. Michael Milken. Well, he was a crook, but he helped a lot of people. And then you get to the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Award given to Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch. I found it very telling that the man who chairs it was Oliver North's attorney. And he said the honorees reflect the integrity and achievement that defined Justice Ginsburg's career and legend. And they reflect that integrity by trying to tear down Justice Ginsburg's career and legend and achievement. I mean, look, I'm used to Republicans raping the legacies of people from Lincoln to Jesus. But even this shocked me. And I read about it in a great piece in Mother Jones by David Corn, veteran Washington journalist and political commentator. He is the Washington bureau chief for Mother Jones and an analyst for MSNBC. He's written 4 New York Times bestsellers, including the number one bestseller, Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war in America and the election of Donald Trump. His book, American Psychosis, is one you have to own, exposing the Republican practice of boosting and weaponizing rage and derangement of right-wing white folks. It is always a pleasure to welcome David Corn back to SiriusXM. Hello, sir.
Hey, John. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you. It takes a lot to shock me at this point, David, I got to say. And they've succeeded in doing it. When I think of what Ruth Bader Ginsburg stood for, I mean, maybe hanging around a little too long qualifies Rupert Murdoch. Otherwise, I don't really get the connection other than her name's a brand to be abused.
This foundation, which is set up with money from a guy who used to run the Thomson Reuters company, and Westlaw, which is a sort of search engine for legal documents and court cases. He died a while back, but left a lot of money behind. And I don't know, they started 2-3 years ago, about the time she passed, handing out these awards. And one award went to Barbara Streisand, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Leadership Award. That made sense. And it was always supposed to be going to women, right?
Right.
Given how RBG was such a pioneer in women's rights, but also her own story, which, if you've seen the great movie about it, is well depicted. But then this year, they announce they're doing 5 awards to men and women. And then on top of that, that they are saying that people like Elon Musk, who has in recent months, amplified anti-Semitic and racist messages on Twitter or X, whatever the hell you want to call it, and Rupert Murdoch, who we saw from the $787 million lawsuit, was profiting off disinformation that Fox knew it was putting out about Trump's big lie, and thus inciting violence and an attempted coup against the U.S. government, and whose network for decades has challenged and undermined the values that Ruth Bader Ginsburg fought for. Now, they have the right to do that as conservatives, but there is nothing but anything Rupert Murdoch has done or anything Elon Musk has done that reflects the values of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And
correct.
I saw the announcement of this thing on Wednesday, and I tweeted about it. This is just awful. What's going on here? And then I got tied up with other things. But this morning, I reached out to family members, and I was one of the first people who they gave a statement to, saying that they totally denounce this. And not only do they denounce, they renounce. They want this foundation to take their mother's name off the award, and they don't want to have anything to do with it going forward. They were not told about these honorees. They were not consulted. They didn't even know the announcement was coming. And this is, Jim Ginsburg and Jane Ginsburg, her adult children, and as well as grandkids and everybody else in the family. So, I got that statement ahead of a lot of other journalists and posted it in a story today. But we also, my colleague Ali Breland and myself, did a little digging, and we saw that the woman who chairs this foundation, the widow of the guy Dwight Oppenheim, for whom this is named and where the money comes from, well, it just so happens, just coincidentally, I know you could never, ever, ever guess or imagine this, but she's a Trump supporter and a Republican supporter. She gave $50,000 to a Trump super PAC in 2016 that happened to have been set up by Paul Manafort.
By Paul Manafort. For God's sake. This is Julie Opperman, right? Who did this?
Yeah. Julie Opperman. And then in 2020, she gave, $200,000 or so to more, I think, but to a combination of the National Republican Congressional Campaign, Congressional Committee, and Take the House Back Super PAC for Republicans. So she's a major Republican donor major Trump backer in 2016. And for some reason, she's taken the RBG brand and has used it as a good housekeeping seal of approval for Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch. I mean, it's
this is what blows my mind here, David.
Brazen, I mean, saying it's brazen doesn't do it justice. This is like giving the Smokey the Bear leadership award to arsonists.
Exactly. I mean, this is like the Roman Polanski Center for Runaway Girls. I mean, I was thinking all day. Oh. Honoring right wingers in the name of Ruth Ginsburg is like honoring right wingers in the name of Jesus, except this is even more perverse, because I would say I think of Ruth Ginsburg. I think of her as a woman, and I think of her as a Jewish woman. Now, no media figure did more to undo women's reproductive rights than Rupert Murdoch. No media figure on earth did more over the decades to help erode support for Roe and take those rights away. And Elon Musk has turned Twitter into a Nazi chat room, where he reinstates people like Kanye West praises Hitler and gets his account back. I mean, it's astonishing. I don't even know why these right wing figures would want an award with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's name on it, other than, I guess, bragging rights that maybe it makes them look more humane.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it was I'm just going to look it up here now, because it was pretty ridiculous, because they got quotes from all the honorees. And if you look at the one from Murdoch, it's, you know, he says, where I'm just scrolling through this hard to believe press release. He says, yes, I am deeply honored to receive. Imagine this is an Australian accent. I don't do Aussie accents, so you probably do better. But I am deeply honored to receive the Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg Leadership Award from the Dwight D. Opperman Foundation. This recognition not only reflects my journey in the media and publishing industry, but also represents the relentless defense of civil liberties and a commitment to civil discourse that Justice Ginsburg embodied. Civil discourse.
Like hiring Jesse Waters.
Or, you know, Tucker Carlson, Bill O'Reilly, you know, the drunk judge. You know, it's...
Keeping Roger Ailes employed through dozens of rape accusations. It's right up RBG's alley.
Her reasoned approach to life, and she did appreciate a good argument. You know, it's famous that she was friends with Antonin Scalia. She liked having friends on the other side of the court and in life to argue and debate issues, but not people who put out crackpot racist conspiracy theories that are used to overthrow the U.S. government. So a sentence from Rupert Murdoch with the words civil discourse just underscores the complete absurdity of this award.
So I want to tell you, I've already thought of a way that we can balance this karmically, Mr. Korn, and I'm going to present to some investors and VC capitalist guys I know next week the Ronald Reagan Family Values Award. And for the first year, I want to give it out to Charlie Sheen, Lil Wayne, and then the collective drag queens of the United States, because why not? Let's go ahead and do it right back to them.
Yeah, maybe RuPaul will accept on behalf of them.
I think that's brilliant.
I think we can do that.
I think RuPaul would accept that award, by the way.
Probably. It's all part of this right wing grift, and I don't know if the foundation is making money off this, but they've hijacked this award in order for them to get more attention and to honor, Rupert Murdoch and Elon Musk. People who I assume Julie Opperman and other people at the foundation find useful politically.
That's it.
The other thing here is there's no obvious liberal in the sense that they are known for their ideas, liberal ideas in this package. I mean, Stallone is, I don't know, maybe a Democrat. Martha Stewart probably
not
is.
Lately.
I don't know what Mike Milken is, but none of them are known for their ideas and politics and current affairs. I mean, I'm not saying they're not smart, but the people who are known for their, yeah, you know, for what passes as ideas, Elon Musk and Rupert Murdoch here, are completely opposed to that Ruth Bader Ginsburg stood for.
Well, I hope you'll tune in next year when we launch the Rush Limbaugh Memorial Gay Porn Awards, because I can already see it playing out beautifully. I want to ask you about a different kind of double talk and jive, Mr. Korn, if I could, while we have you here. Because
sure.
This week we got to see the spectacle of Robert Hur testifying to a bunch of Democrats who were furious at him for being dishonest, and a bunch of Republicans who were more furious at him for not being more dishonest. I kind of felt bad for Mr. Hur when they revealed that he had just lied about Biden forgetting when his son had died. I know Robert Hur is just a well-meaning aging man with a poor memory, but what do you make of all this? And what do you make of Hur resigning the DOJ before the testimony?
Well, I thought that maybe that the resignation would allow him to be more freewheeling in his remarks, but that proved not to be the case. He basically stuck to what was in the report and didn't go much beyond that. I mean, he answered questions when challenged about some of his observations. But to me, you know, the bottom line is that he found nothing to prosecute Joe Biden for. And the Republicans got all tied up because they kept pointing to the report as being tremendously damning for Joe Biden. And then they kind of accused him of being part of a deep state conspiracy to protect Biden by not prosecuting him. Well, if he was part of a deep state conspiracy to protect Biden, I think he probably would have written that report in a much different manner. So they were kind of, you know, they were chasing their tail, and they couldn't decide if he was someone to cite to slam Biden or someone to bash because to show that there is this conspiracy to protect Biden after Trump. But to me, the interesting thing was that, you know, that one line in the report about Biden being, you know, a well-meaning old guy with a poor memory, Hur kept trying to justify his decision not to prosecute by saying we had it put in the report, you know, how we saw Biden, but actually you didn't. You could just say he remembered this and he didn't remember that and let people draw their own conclusions whether his memory was sharp or not. But the key thing that I think under questioning from several Democrats, particularly Adam Schiff, it turned out that line was speculation. And by that, and he used
it. Yes, it was.
The whole context of the line was, if we were to bring a case against Biden, we expect his defense would be to say, I'm just a kindly, well-meaning guy with a poor memory.
Yes.
Now, wait a second. Would Biden say that? Would his lawyers say that? Maybe, but maybe not. Hur's not a mind reader. Mm-hmm. He can't predict the future. And so he was not stating an objective fact that Biden, which would be Biden remembered this and he didn't remember that. He was giving this opinion, the speculation. And as Adam Schiff pointed out, it is a prosecutor's duty, his obligation, not to prejudice the interests of a target of an investigation if you do not indict. So if someone investigates you, John, for all the many things that you should be investigated for,
many.
But at the end of the day, they don't have a case. They can't come out and say, John, you're a sleazebag, you're an idiot, you're a moron. They just have to say, we looked and we can't bring a case. With a special counsel report, you can go a little further and talk about what evidence you looked at and get more into the why, but you're not supposed to characterize the target.
And well, you nailed that in your piece in Mother Jones, House Hearing Spotlight, Special Counsel Robert Hur's sleazy assault on Biden. Let me just quote you, David. You said Hur did much more than stick to the facts. He was stating a subjective opinion. He did so in the form of speculation. This loaded comment came as part of Hur's explanation of why he would not file charges against Biden, even if the Justice Department policy against prosecuting a sitting president didn't exist. I had totally forgotten that, but you're right. Somehow, it's not remotely possible to ever prosecute a sitting Republican president. But when it's a Democrat, I've decided not to prosecute him. It was just double talk all the way.
Yeah, it was pretty. And you know, the thing that, you know, Democrats raised this too, is he had to know what he was doing. I mean, Herr comes across to me as a smart guy, you know, an accomplished prosecutor who knows what he's doing. And if you put a line like that in a report, particularly on the second page, I think that's where it appeared. Hmm. And the report's being read by 10 other lawyers on your staff. There aren't at least 347 conversations about whether you should put this line in or whether you should characterize it differently. They had to go over that line, you know, a gazillion times. And so it was no accident. It wasn't a slip. It wasn't an oversight. They know their duty was not to taint, you know, the target of the investigation and not to put out speculation. I mean, I have read, if I had a nickel for every special counsel report I've ever read. No, I mean, I don't know how many I've read over the decades I've been in Washington, but I've read a lot. And they usually are kind of like Joe Friday, stick right to the facts. Now, mm-hmm, prosecutors or special counsels are you know, political appointees sometimes, and they put things in footnotes and they put facts in, hoping that others will find them and make hay out of them. I did that with several things in the Iran-Contra report years ago, and later was told that Special Counsel Lawrence Walsh was hoping somebody would focus on this, but he didn't, you know, put a spotlight on it. You know, just it was a fact, and if you came across it and looked further, it turned into a story. So you're allowed to do that, and they all know how to do that. But this was really, really a bold step beyond the strictures and the obligations, mm-hmm, of a prosecutor. So, you know, he's a Republican. I don't know what his motives are. He says he's not a member of the Federalist Society, but I checked. He's given presentations at Federalist Society meetings. Boom. But, you know, he may not be a member. You know,
and Steve Scalise isn't a white supremacist. He just spoke at a few conferences. That's all.
He's white supremacist adjacent.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, it's like, I think for Scalise, it's like whites on the average are better. You know, not always supreme, but most of the time. You know, but Herr had to know. And that's what makes this, so worrisome. And the whole thing is that drives me crazy is that the Republicans go on and on and on about the weaponization of the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
This is about as good an example as you're going to get. A prosecutor who can't bring a case against a sitting president, doesn't have the evidence, says there's no wrongdoing, but finds a way to use the investigation to harm him politically.
Exactly right. And all the papers that ran dozens of articles about how Joe Biden couldn't remember when his son died will run tiny corrections on page 36. Mr. Korn, before I lose you, we've only got a couple minutes, but I wanted to ask you, which gesture do you think was more politically significant this week? Kamala Harris being the first president or vice president to make a visit to a woman's healthcare clinic, or Chuck Schumer essentially calling on the citizens of Israel for regime change? Both moments were incredibly inspiring and historic.
And obviously in different ways. I think the war in Gaza has just been awful for obviously the people there. It was the October 7th attack was horrific for Israelis, and you know we're not in harm's way, but American Jews have been really, I think, put through the ringer in dealing with all of this, dealing with the rise of anti-Semitism, and yep, trying to figure out people who have tended to be supportive of Israel over the years, but looking at what it's doing, the brutality of this horrific bombing campaign and now starvation campaign in Gaza has really caused a lot of conflict and discussion and debate. And I just know from talking to people, my family and friends and colleagues, that, you know, there are a lot of mixed feelings and mixed emotions. And I think the Biden administration, I wrote about this from the get-go, I warned him, don't get too close to Netanyahu. He is not your friend. You know, you want to say there's no distance, a bear hug and all that. You'll be able to have more influence that way. You know, don't give this guy a blank check. You'll come back home and your bank account will be emptied and and all the furniture stolen and you have your home falling down. It's so obvious. And it's just taken the Biden folks a long time to figure out how to create some distance and separation. In the meantime, tens of thousands of civilians have died. And I thought what Schumer did was, Israel's best friend in the U.S. Congress.
He is.
Was quite significant. You know, it didn't go as far as I'd like it to go in terms of what they're going to do about Netanyahu. But, you know, it's hard to turn, you know, a big shipping oil tanker. It's hard to turn. Right? Yeah. They take days to make a turn. But I thought that the Schumer speech was the beginning, and I think it does put more pressure on Biden to move faster on his turn. And the Harris thing, too, was significant, but we probably don't have time to go into
that. Yeah, we got
to
hit a break, but I thank you so much for giving your time on a Friday night, Mr. Corn. Everyone needs to pick up American Psychosis. Follow David at David Corn DC. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, especially during a crazy week like this. I wish you a great weekend.
Look for my newsletter,
yes.
Ourland, at davidcorn.com.
Ourland newsletter. I get it. I subscribe. You guys should, too. Thank you so much, David. It's always an honor. Have a great one.
Sure thing, John.
Peace. We'll be right back with your calls. We're at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. We're at 866-997-4748. Today, during a luncheon with the Prime Minister of Ireland, Leo Varadkar, Joe Biden offered some comments on that speech Chuck Schumer gave yesterday about how Israel needs to change their leadership. A1.
Senator Schumer contacted my staff, my senior staff. He's going to make that speech, and I'm not going to elaborate on the speech. He made a good speech, and I think he expressed a serious concern shared not only by him, but by many Americans.
Meaning Biden agrees with it, but he can't say he agrees with it. This is how it's going to be going forward. Now, the Irish Prime Minister was there for this. When it was his turn to speak, he reiterated his nation's disappointment in how our weapons are propping up the ongoing Israeli assaults on civilian populations that have already claimed over 30,000 lives. A2.
The president was very clear that the U.S. would continue to support Israel and to assist Israel to defend itself. So I don't think that's going to change. But I think none of us like to see American weapons being used in the way they are. The way they're being used at the moment is not self-defense.
Let's go to the phones. We're at 866-997-GRIT. And happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. God, that's this weekend, isn't it? Oh, no. Oh, and it's on a Saturday? Oh, no.
No, it's Sunday.
Oh, it's Sunday. That's slightly better. I mean, Chris, you've lived in New York City for St. Patrick's Day. You know what an unholy amateur hour this city turns into.
Yeah. It's like Omega Man. It's like...
It's Omega Man with a lot of guys coming in from the outer boroughs and vomiting and donating their urine to our sidewalk.
It's like I Am Legend. It's like batten down the hatches, hide your children, hide your collectibles. get a mop ready and stay away.
I wonder, I mean, St. Patrick, for those of you who don't know, is the patron saint of drunk young couples who scream fight at each other outside bars. That's what he's known for. And every year on St. Patrick's Day, it's when we celebrate the man who drove all the drunken schmucks into Manhattan from the outer boroughs. Oh, my God. And it's always guys fighting with their girlfriend, Marie. Always. I'll just say, alcohol, friends, 75,000 deaths in America every year. Cannabis, zero deaths in America every year. Maybe next St. Patrick's Day, some of y'all need to go green, if you know what I'm saying. Amateur hour for you drinkers. Let's go to the phones. Jay in North Carolina, thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress. Good evening.
Hi, John.
Hey, Jay.
Hi. Well, I'm sorry to hear Carl Wallinger passed away. I was wondering if you'd mention him.
We did. We played some World Party the other night, and we're going to be playing World Party for the rest of the month. I loved his band, and I loved his voice, and I loved the music he created. That it truly Beatlesque. Truly, truly, if you love the Beatles, you'll love what World Party did.
And I think Sinead played sang backup on a couple of his songs.
On the Goodbye Jumbo album, yeah. They collaborated a couple times. Yeah. It's hard to hear, but she did. Please.
I had a question. Do you still do those decaffeinated videos?
No, they're very caffeinated. I still do them. We did a bunch of those years ago for Maker Studios, and now I still do them. But it's just tricky having the time to get to record them. But we're going to be doing some more. I've got a bunch of scripts just waiting for a chance to shoot.
Okay, because you know I had an coming this for this election season. You know, I thought you'd start off, you know, addressing, you know, the right wing folks, saying something like, you know, get it, you guys. You don't believe in facts. You don't believe in persuasion. You don't believe in elections. So we're going to give that to you. Just assume that you won the election, okay? You have a nice media bubble out there that's going to convince you that Trump is still president.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us who live in reality, we can actually, you know, fix the country and do all the things we want.
Well, I kind of said that in the video I had about secession, but I like the way you say it, Jay. I think you should make your own video, and I'll share it.
Okay.
You said it better than I can, brother.
Okay, if I ever find the time. That's why I'm giving you the ideas.
Yeah, well, I'm supposed to be writing a book right now, and here I am talking on the radio instead and pretending to be a dad when I should be writing all the time. So I'm trying to make videos, but I'm on a deadline. I have to go into a cave for the next 5 months and write. So thank you so much. I will work on it, and I'm trying to shoot more of these. It's just, you know, like usually you just sit in your car and you set up a camera and you talk for 20 seconds, and that's a normal web video. But I'm too ugly and goofy, and I need to, like, edit and have music and do a lot of things and take a couple days of a project, and that slows the whole thing down. And the guy who's trying to kill me for the insurance money who owns this show is very mad because he wants me to make a lot more of those videos, and I'm too busy trying to be Fellini with something that should just, you know, take a minute and post it. So I'll try to be more sloppy and get more stuff out. Thank you so much for the call, man. I do appreciate it. Let me go to Brian in Oregon. Brian, thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress.
John,
hi.
Dynamite show as usual. That Jay's pretty interesting character.
Yes, he's very funny.
I love David Korn too. He's got a great voice. You know,
anytime I can get David Korn on this show, I'm always happy. He's a force of nature.
Yeah, and anyways, John, I was every time I listen to Simon and Julie. I'll start with my thought on that first. I'm
Please.
Amazed how many white people haven't. On their own, well, it's not just about Native Americans. It's about African Americans, Mexican, you know, Hispanics, Asians. But there's a lot of literature on the whole history of Native peoples.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm short on my own reading, but I've you know read Spirit of Crazy Horse and Black Elk Speaks, and I haven't read yet the. But I'm aware of it. The Lost My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
A myriad of other written histories that are out there for people to pick up and look at.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And that guy Russ, I don't know if it's just the way people are wired that they don't even think, well, I'm going to
What about the guy Russ? What about the caller? I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, Russ was the guy that called in, and he was talking about he was outside a bar on South Dakota Reservation. I can't remember if it was Pine Ridge or Rosebud, and a woman passed out next to him screaming that it was his fault.
Yeah.
And he was upset. He couldn't decide whether he should put an arm around her or what the deal was. But I just think some of that is such naivete, and I don't know. I think it's also a mentality or I think it's a curse on our education system of critical thinking and not curiosity, really, and exploration. So anyway, that's what I think sometimes. And you've had a few other callers on that. Native. Well, I don't know what you finally decided to call the show, but it's a brilliant.
We don't know yet.
The unnamed Native story.
I mean, I feel like we can just call it Native Voices at this point. We've all.
Yeah, I think that's what we've been calling it. Indigenous Voices.
That's the shorthand. Yeah. We've all.
You know, Simon would like to call it like Merciless Savages or something like that. And Julie's going to want to go with something that's very. You know, she's very warm and he's very sharp. That's why the segment works so well.
Yeah. He can call it explaining things to the long pig.
I'm going to Dances with Wolves, the director's cut. That's what I'll start calling it. We'll make it 4 hours long.
Then you get a lot of Charles's from Miami.
I love when Charles from Miami calls now.
I love that guy. He's
brilliant.
Fantastic.
Hey, thank you very much, Brian. I got to run. TV's Frank is waiting in the wings. Thank you. And I don't make Frank wait. You know why? Because Frank is not just a comedy writer and performer who began his career writing for the Peabody Award-winning Comedy Central series Mystery Science Theater 3000, not just because he was TV's Frank and went on to be a writer and producer and actor on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and not just because I have worked with this man on TV and on radio and on stage, but because Frank Conniff refuses to define excellence as he feels he redefines it every time he walks on stage. And don't forget, the Mads are back, A Night of Shorts 7 is a download this week. You have until Sunday to download Frank and Trace Bilyeu's 7 set of sadistic shorts for just $6. TV's Frank, welcome back. It's great to have you on Sirius.
Hey, John. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. It's great to have you. I hope you had a good week, Frank. How are you?
I'm good. I did have a good week. We had a really good Mads show this past Tuesday night. And, although, I already told you about meeting Chloe Sevigny last week, so
that
didn't happen. I didn't meet any fashion icons or movie stars this week, so.
Well, you can still rub it in my face a week later. It's all right.
it's a good week. No complaints.
I'm glad to hear it. I also know it's a good week because you're a TikTok whore. I know. That's where I find you.
I love TikTok.
I've been kind of mystified by it, Frank. I've been getting more into TikTok and trying to post more videos and find more time to make more videos. But when I saw this bipartisan effort to force the Chinese government to either sell TikTok or have it taken away from app stores in America, I thought, okay, I get that, because you don't like what the algorithm does, and it's selling our personal data, and the videos are causing emotional problems for all kinds of young people, and it's unhealthy. But why are we only concerned when a foreign adversary does it through an app, not when a foreign adversary uses Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg's apps to fuck with American kids as well? I just, why not a comprehensive data privacy law for everyone that guarantees that no organization can use your info unless you give them the right to do it? Why do we have to just single out just this one? I mean, what was your take on it, Frank?
Well, I mean, for one thing, this whole bill, I'm usually not one to be, the Democrats and Republicans, they all suck. Because there's big differences between the parties. But this is one of those instances where you understand why people think that way, because like you said, this is a bipartisan bill. They can't come together on health care or gun control, but they can come together on this. And I thought the whole bill was just outrageous. And I think the reason they don't want to do a comprehensive bill, like you say, it's because they don't want to do that. The billionaires who run those companies want to keep making money any way they can, whether it be data mining or whatever. And Congress is going to support them in that endeavor. This is all about that, you know, that those profits aren't happening within the United States. They're happening in China. And
I think you're right.
I think it's outrageous. And does anybody really, is there anybody out there who would like the idea of Steve Mnuchin owning TikTok?
He's much less creepy to be handling the algorithms my young girl looks at.
Than communist China. And it's just indicative of how out of touch these people in Congress are. They've never understood, they haven't understood anything since the days of GeoCities or whatever. They've never understood the internet. They've never gotten it. And it's just a bunch of things that young people do that they don't understand. And they're so out of touch. And it's just ridiculous that this app that I go to a lot just for entertainment, to watch people talk about their favorite movies, to watch writers talk about the craft of writing, to watch mom's shuffle dance, that's one of my favorite accounts, and just people talking about food and rating fast food restaurants, or music people talking about the history of Lou Reed or whatever. Well, it's just a wonderful place for entertainment. It's fucking better than television, I'm telling you.
Wow.
But
you're not making videos, are you? You're not making videos, are you?
No, I want you to
create content.
You know what? I do, because they do have texting on, they do have text on TikTok. So I repost all of my stuff from other sites.
I see. But okay.
I just like, being a consumer of it and enjoying it. And it's filled with what I would call, for lack of a better word, to use an out of date term, great television personalities. But these are just everyday people.
I agree.
Who just started talking, and a lot of them are so charismatic and they are very engaging, and they speak articulately. And it's just a wonderful thing. And the idea that these old farts in Congress are going to shut it all down, it just drives me crazy.
You know, it's also strange. You mentioned the bipartisan support for the bill. The bipartisan opposition to the bill was fascinating as well. It's not a lot of times we see AOC and Marjorie Taylor Greene voting together, Thomas Massey and Maxwell Frost voting together against this. I found it fascinating. And you said, I imagine it'll be very comforting to people with illnesses who can't afford medication or proper health care that Congress banned TikTok. Frank, I kind of thought that this was a trap, a Trojan horse they were trying to set for Joe Biden to walk into. He's already struggling with some young people because of Gaza and Netanyahu. And if Joe Biden were to sign off on removing TikTok from app stores, I have no doubt that would hurt young people more than anything else he could do. Yes.
It would be disastrous. He would come off as older and more out of touch than people already think he is. The whole thing just pisses me off that this is what's taking up Congress's time. Talking about communist China, what is this, the 50s? You know, is the Cold War going on? It's just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but also, you know, it's kind of fitting that we're having this discussion on the Ides of March, Frank, because I think this bill is going to die on the floor of Senate just like Caesar did, and Chuck Schumer is going to let it. I don't think we'll be hearing much more about this bill now that the House has passed.
I was encouraged when I heard the Senate wasn't going to pass it. But the idea that they're even considering it, and there was one congressman who's like the TikTok guy, and I forget his name, but he got a lot of traction in his career from going on TikTok. And he supported the bill, and he put out a TikTok video about it, and he just got trashed, and he deleted the video. I mean, these people, they don't know what they're doing.
I know. I mean, the Biden campaign just opened a TikTok account, and
he would
sign the bill to ban it unless it's sold.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'll be the first to agree that these algorithms can be very damaging to young people, and I will be the first to agree that it's creepy that our data is being collected, but look homeward, Angel. You look at Zuckerberg and Musk first, because I think what Twitter's doing and what Facebook, I mean, Facebook already helped elect Trump. Twitter is trying to help elect Trump right now. Instagram.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The calls are coming from inside the house. We don't. So forget about communist China. We have our own. We have people running our media companies who hate democracy more than any communists.
Frank, it's true. I got to ask, would you still defend TikTok so much if it was the only place to see a Rudy Giuliani sex tape? Because honestly, the comedian in me doesn't know what to do with this information. On the one hand, it feels like an early Christmas. On the other hand, it seems like an early thing we shouldn't touch.
This is the first time hearing of this. Did this just break?
Yesterday, allegedly, all major news outlets have been sent a Rudy Giuliani sex tape. And it happened the same day Texas banned Pornhub. So I don't know. Maybe they're just being preemptive and safe down there. But yeah.
Well, Giuliani, you know what? If I really don't give a shit about it. And if it's him and a consenting adult, then let him make a sex tape. I don't care. It's him, we know from the Ali G movie that he's not above coming on to an underage woman or a much younger woman. So
very willing to be below underage women as well in that movie. You're exactly right.
Yes. So whatever, Rudy Giuliani, it's like Trump. He doesn't need stuff like this to make him seem creepy. You know, it's already been established that he's like one of the sleaziest people ever to walk the earth. And I know I'm not going to watch it. That's for sure. Under any circumstance.
Mitch from Kent State is on the line. He wants to talk to Frank. Hello, Mitch. You're on with the great one himself. TV's Frank is in the house.
Thank you, John.
Hey, Mitch.
Good to hear you, Frank.
Hey.
What's up?
Good. If I may indulge in a couple of movie anniversaries. You know, today, in this day in 1964, Ringo laid down the line, A Hard Day's Night. And, of course, John put that in his mind and made a movie.
60 years ago today, Ringo said that, huh?
Right, that's right.
And then, by the way, that reminds me, Mitch, did you guys see that video that was out recently of the Beatles on a BBC show performing Help? Did you guys see that?
No, I didn't see it.
It's like Steve Van Zandt like reposted it. And it's really special because it's not them at Shea Stadium. It's not them with it. And someone who posted it said that, like, the BBC probably told the kids in the audience to keep it down because it's not like their usual stuff from that era where you can barely hear them. You can really hear them. And it just, they are so fucking kick-ass. It's ridiculous. And
they're great.
Steve Van Zandt in his post said he thinks the first 10 seconds of the song Help, he described it as the most extraordinary 10 seconds in rock music. You know,
wow.
So it's worth listening to.
I would agree. Mitch, you've been out-geeked by TV's Frank.
Yes, he has. Of course, he's the best. And also the other anniversary was in this day, 1970, the Beatles got their one and only Academy Award for Let It Be.
And who presented the Oscar?
That's right.
Who presented the Oscar, children?
Charlton Heston.
No.
I know who accepted it.
Who accepted it?
Quincy Jones accepted it. I remember because I was watching.
I thought it was Paul and Linda. Paul and Linda accepted it.
No, not the Oscar. The Quincy Jones accepted it on behalf of the Beatles. That's my memory. You can prove me wrong. I won't dispute it because, you know, my memory might be faulty, but that's my memory of having...
Charlton Heston presented the award, though.
I thought it was John Wayne, guys. I think maybe I'm too young to know this for sure, but... Oh, no, you're right. It was the Grammys. I'm sorry. Frank is right. In the Grammys. But at the Grammys in 1971, the Beatles won for Let It Be. Paul and Linda accepted the award. John Wayne gave it to him, but at the Oscars, yes, it was Quincy Jones who picked it up.
Okay. Right again. And also, happy birthday to Sly Stone. Sylvester Stallone Stone. Yeah, not Sylvester Stone. Sly Stone's birthday today also.
Sly Stone is 81 today.
We love Sly. He's awesome.
We love Sly, and I keep praying that Sly's best period of his life is ahead of him. It's also the birthday of some friends of the show. Dee Snider has a birthday today. We love him. And Mike Love of the Beach Boys, who
is
a very interesting person and talked about Manson. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll go there. And also,
Mike Love is the one degree of separation between Manson and Trump. So let's not, you know.
Gotcha.
And Mike Love proved to him he was a Trumper before anyone, because trying to convince Brian Wilson to not make pet sounds is a very Trump thing to do.
There you go. Thank you, Frank. I'll get to my real subject here, Frank. You know, speaking of movies, you know, I'll never forget when the Graduate came out. I think it had the distinction of being the first movie with an M rating, a mature rating. Am I correct?
Oh,
I think.
I don't know if that was the first. If that was the first one, I really don't. I'm really not aware of that. If it's the
I don't know. I've never heard of the M ratings.
There was an M rating for a while.
That was before PG. It was M for mature. Yeah.
Right.
That's a whole thing.
I always thought The Graduate was PG,
they didn't have
X rating
PG back then. Yeah. Midnight Cowboy was X rated
and won the Best Picture Oscar as an X rated film.
That's right.
Yeah.
I missed all the good stuff, man. The 70s and 60s were awesome. I missed everything.
Yeah, for sure. But the whole rating system, is it useless? Is it irrelevant anymore? I mean, because times have changed. I mean, it's all blur to me.
It's not. It's still relevant. If you have kids, you know, knowing something's G or PG or PG-13, it'll help some parents who care about those things. And then they'll go on TV and the kids will watch whatever the hell they want to watch anyway.
It goes on TV anyway. I mean,
ratings systems exist now almost in a box office standard. Like R-rated movies usually don't get made because they won't make as much money because PG-13 has the widest possible audience.
Correct.
It's a little bit naughty,
The rating system forces artists to cut their work. I mean, there's so many famous stories of how people have cut scenes to get a PG or to get an R.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Scorsese eyeball scene. That's the casino scene with Joe Pesci and the eyeball. When they put the guy's head in the vise and tighten the vise till the eyeball pops out, and they wanted to give it an X rating. And Scorsese filmed it, and he refused. He fought for that scene and fought for that scene and fought for that scene, kept submitting it with that scene in. And so by the time he finally broke down and agreed to cut the scene, the board left everything else in the movie, and he had one of the most violent, profanity-laden films to ever get an R rating in Casino. So it kind of worked.
My understanding of that was that he did that on purpose.
He did that on purpose,
board. He put in the scene that he knew he would have to cut. But
he fought for the scene. For the scene so they would ignore the rest of his content.
Right.
That just sounds like a crazy way to make art.
Yeah, but it's everyone who works in mainstream entertainment has to deal with censorship, or I don't know if censorship is the right.
Censorship.
Have to deal with compromise. They have to. Well, you know, anyone who makes a movie for a studio has to address the notes from the studio and has to change things that they don't necessarily want to change. And it's what you have to. All of the great filmmakers, with a few exceptions. But Scorsese is one of them. He's always, through his whole career, he always had to navigate dealing with the studios and addressing their needs. And it's not like he can just put whatever he wants on the screen all the time.
Mitch, anything else, Mitch?
No, one more anniversary. This date, 1967, Frank and Nancy Sinatra's Something Stupid, number one.
Great song. Great song. Nancy calls it the incest song.
Yeah, very creepy that they did that as a duet, I have to say.
She calls it the incest song to this day. She's in her 80s and still calls it. It's great.
The only collaboration of that sort. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's great. First father and daughter to ever hit a number one together.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Right on, man.
And if you ever get to see it, the TV special Moving with Nancy Sinatra, which they showed on Turner Classic Movies one time is really great. And a lot of it is taken up by her work with her boyfriend at the time, Lee Hazelwood, who wrote These Boots Are Made for Walking. And they were a great collaboration, those two.
I'm learning so much tonight. Hey, Mitch, thank you very much. We got to hit a break or we go to radio jail. Thank you for the call. Quick one. We'll be right back with more of your calls. Frank, you going to hang out with us?
Sure.
People have thoughts on TikTok. We'll be right back. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back, joined by TV's Frank, Frank Conniff of Mystery Science Theater 3000, taking your calls at 866-997-4748. Let me go to Bill in Vegas, calling about TikTok. Bill, welcome. You're on Progress.
Hey, John. Always good to talk to you.
Hi.
I'll make this real quick.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with Hal Sparks that TikTok is Chinese spyware, and that's why I've never installed it. But that said, if Mnuchin gets his hands on that data, it will be used for 10 times the nefarious purposes.
Thank you.
Than the Chinese.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yep. Exactly.
MAGA will, if you post any kind of woke or anti-Trump content, you'll end up on his enemies list.
That's it, man. That's it. Although in the case of Mnuchin, all he cares about is money. So you never know. They might have anything there. If Mnuchin can squeeze an extra nickel out of something, he would do it. So I don't know if they would necessarily spend the money to buy it and then restrict the traffic on it. You know what I'm saying? I have no doubt they would boost right-wing garbage, but I think he would still... Mnuchin cares about profit more than he cares about a MAGA agenda.
But you know what? That's another thing I thought about is when they want to keep... They so object to it being in Chinese-owned and they want to keep it in America. Is there any billionaire tech bro you can think of who isn't a total asshole? I mean, they're all like the worst... people in the world. The idea that we want them, you know, that it's preferable to have any of these tech dude bro people having the app as opposed to a foreign country, it just makes sense because they're the worst people. They're the worst people on the planet.
Yeah, man, I agree. And again, I've never seen anti-Semites and homophobes and racists attacking me all over the place on TikTok, but Twitter, it's daily.
Yeah, yeah.
All right,
thanks, man.
On Twitter.
Okay, let me go to Ralph on line three, calling from the great state of Connecticut. Ralph, thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress with TV's Frank.
Hey, hi. Hey, Frank. Hey, John. Oh,
hey.
Department of Justice. It's very, hi. Very interesting acronym that they have. Very fitting, because if you write the initials DOJ, what does that spell?
Dodge.
Dodge. And that's exactly what the fat cats do with the justice system. They dodge accountability. But the best is yet to come. If you look up the word Dodge, D-O-D-G-E, in a big fat dictionary, the phonetic spelling is D-O-J. Somewhere, somebody has a sense of humor.
There you go. I love it. I love it.
It's
like
true.
That's like a Mike Kaplan joke, but you're exactly right. It's right there in front of us.
I don't know who Mike Kaplan is, but okay.
Oh, he's a great comic, so you're in good company.
Welcome back, Connor.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
That's Gabe Kaplan. Hello.
Oh. Let me go to Matt, who's on the line, too, from the great state of California. Matt, welcome. You're on Sirius XM with TV's Frank. What's up?
So we went down the whole Gabe Kaplan, you know, welcome back, cop, you know, Mr. Kaplan.
Yes.
I I can't follow.
Mr. Carter.
Love that.
Oh, Mr. Carter.
Like Mr. Carter.
Brilliant.
Seriously, guys.
I could hear the millennials running for the exits as we do this. Go on, please.
Oh my gosh, John. I mean, you and I are like the same age of weirdness here. So
okay. So what do you think of it?
I'm completely lost what I was going to come back with. So I
okay. We have that effect on people. What did you want to talk about when you were on?
Could you just tell us an anecdote about your family, like Gabe Kaplan would do at the end of every episode?
Tell us about an uncle. One of your uncles.
And his wife, and that was the only scene she had in the whole show.
I know.
Sitting and listening to him tell
you know, there was an episode, they tried to have Groucho on the show one time. There's photos of Groucho on the set with the full cast of Welcome Back, Kotter. But he couldn't do it. He couldn't handle his lines and couldn't hit his mark. So they wound up not ever using any of the footage. That's but there's still bad. Still photos of it, which is crazy. I just learned that this week. So did you remember your original point? So we took you on enough tangents.
Original point was my my comments on your interview with Dr. Phil.
Yes. Oh, okay. Please tell me.
Like I am actually a commercial on Sirius XM now.
Okay.
Because I said I liked. What he was saying, and I'm like, wait, what? And then he just like blew it apart. I'm like, oh crap, you're right.
Who blew it apart?
You did.
Oh, I did. I blew you apart.
No, your interview with Dr. Phil was great.
Thank you.
I mean, dude, you're excellent.
Well, you're very kind. I just made a goal that I was going to be nice to him and not yell at him and not get in a fight.
You were nice to him, and he was like a homophobe and a blah, blah, blah.
He's really afraid of people seeking asylum because that's bad for kids, and trans kids getting treatment because that's bad for kids, and protecting each other in a plague because that's bad for kids. Guns, he doesn't worry about too much. Our Phil, I had to bring that up at the end, but I kept it polite because I wanted to show the bosses. Like,
What was he promoting, by the way?
He has a book.
New line of flame retardant children's pajamas.
pretty much.
I didn't know that when he was on. I figured it was piece of shit grifter week on.
Yes.
XM, so.
Nope. They pitched him to us, and I'm like, oh, I'd love to have Phil on, and I wanted to show that I could talk to him and get along and have it be nice and civil, and then they were so shocked they said let's do a town hall with an audience. So we did it, and it was a good hour of TV, and I think I challenged him a bit more than The View did, and you know, but we kept it friendly. I wanted to prove to a few people in the world that I'm capable of doing that. So thank you very much for your kind comments.
Your interviews are brilliant.
He won't stop calling now. It's awkward. Around. The fucking guy won't stop calling. He won't stop calling.
I gotta stop. No, seriously. I mean, it was good. A good interview.
Well, thank you.
And yeah, no.
When is Oprah going to apologize?
Love you on Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, when is Oprah owes us reparations is what I think. Go ahead.
That's a good point. I mean, you and Hal Sparks are like brilliant. And so I'm the guy that has the Vladimir Putin girlfriend who thinks he's brilliant, and like you have to listen to Hal. And
I thought you weren't a couple anymore. I thought you guys were just going to be friends.
Well, she called me back up and said, "Hey, do you want to go out with me?" I'm like, "Yes, that'd be fine."
Hey, listen. The heart invades what it wants. So,
right.
To be with the Putin lover makes sense.
Right.
If he was dating a woman who was into Donald Trump, I'd say you shouldn't have sex with that person. You don't owe that person orgasms. I know life is lonely and hard, but burn some calories. You'll find others. But a woman defending Putin? I mean, is she Russian? Because if she's Russian, I'll understand. If the woman's Russian, I'll understand and forgive you.
She's
is she?
But you know what? People, you know...
Yes, she is. Okay.
Putin is, if some of my more left-wing friends are enamored of Putin, they feel he's the victim of the war of Ukrainian aggression, and that
he's
he's preventing NATO from taking over Ukraine, and the Ukrainians are all Nazis.
He's
fighting back against, there's a lot of that kind of thought.
It proves you go bullshit, far enough over to the left, and you'll meet bullshit, the same lunatics from the right if you go far enough to the left.
Exactly.
Hillary,
yeah.
Hillary's emails. Listen.
Hillary, yep, there you go. Thank you for the call, man.
Right now. Boom, yeah. Done. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. We got a million bye-bye calls. I want to get to everybody. Kevin in Ohio, you're on with TV's Frank.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Are you kidding? What is it, like John Prine? Pretty good, not bad, can't complain.
Nice. Nice,
I'll take
it.
My dog is being a pest. You know that Mnuchin deal? It perked my ear. I heard that they weren't interested in, like, the code.
Right.
I hear, that what he could do with all the data. Apparently, I don't think this is going through, and simply because he said that.
Yeah, he's not. Can you imagine if Mnuchin had TikTok and Musk had Twitter? Can you imagine how scary that would be? It would be MAGA would control the public thought.
MAGA. Oh my
yeah
God. And I know them. I'm hearing
they're already just about there anyway. Imagine. So
yeah,
I know. I got hair down to the floor. I got these dreads. I know a hillbilly and a redneck and this one old biker dude. We're all old guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we all go to lunch.
I thought you were about to walk into a bar.
That's what I thought. I thought he was giving us a
setup.
It
is like a, yes, it's as bad as a joke, but MAGA people aren't all that bad.
They vote that way. They're not bad. They just vote that way. Yeah. I'm not saying they're bad people, and I don't believe in hating. I'm not saying they're bad people, and I don't believe in hating them. But they vote for bad people, and they vote for very bad things.
True,
but they, you know what? It's a complex, nuanced thing. But how do you separate them from what they vote for? You know, if you're voting for an authoritarian and a racist and a sexual offender, a rapist, yeah. if that's who you want. To me, it's a bit of a leap to, well, they're a good person, but they want that in charge. But you know what? On the other hand, though, I've known people who are conservative or like my brother, my late brother Rex, who was very conservative, and you're like, he was a great person. He had a beautiful soul, and yet his political beliefs went along those lines. So like I said, it's a very complex thing, I think.
Here's the formula. If they're in a burning house, you run in to save them. If they need bone marrow or a kidney, you try to help them out. If they want power or an orgasm, you don't have any. Don't help them out that way, okay? Yeah. If their lives are in danger, you save them. If they want more power or pleasure, not your job.
But if you look at these clips online of Trump supporters being interviewed outside of Trump events, a lot of them, let's be honest, they're just fucking morons. They're just not bright
really,
people.
You think?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But their billionaire needs money, and they'll give their billionaire money because that owns the libs. And owning the libs is what the movement's all about. Owning the libs is the one thing that unites them
all.
That's it. It doesn't matter if your house is on fire. Maybe the lib got owned.
Since they can't own slaves anymore, they want to own the libs.
They love owning people. And you know what? If Donald Trump drives the bus we're all in off the cliff, as we plunge to our death, they will turn to us and say, ha ha, your liberal tears are delicious, before they die
too.
Yes,
exactly.
We got to go. Chris and Thea, thank you. What a great show we had tonight. We'll be back again for some more tomorrow. This is SiriusXM Progress. Peace.